and their friends were engaged in the pastimes described above. That means the last chapter was about chapter killing a plumbosaur. What chapter?
18.
In 18, plumbosaur was killed by Balaram by striking him. Balaram struck plumbosaur with his fist. And he was like a snake whose head has been crushed. Balaram is so powerful, but for a moment he had become bewildered. And Krishna told him, now is not the time for you to forget your divine powers. Because Krishna and Balaram were the cowherd boys, when they were the cowherd boys, they had become so absorbed in the playing and in the rasa with the boys, they forgot who they were, or they forgot the extent of who they were. That's like when you're playing with your children, maybe you forget the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So after that, and that took place in Bandiravan, in the great Bandira tree. There was a tree, a great, like a Indian tree, that went all the way across the Yamuna. Lord Jagannath, too. Who's Lord Jagannath?
They were here
for paint. Oh. Who's are they? Oh.
Gopal.
Gopal. Gopal's come. The Lord of the basket. You didn't bring anyone. Do you have Jagannath also? Who do you have? So they were in Bandiravan, which is on the western side of the Yamuna. And it's also on the eastern side of the Yamuna, both. How is that possible? It's on the western side of the Yamuna, but also on the eastern side. How is it possible? Yes, that's how it comes. Bandiravan. But it's actually more on the western side, because it comes around. But then on the other side, it's Lakshmivan. I think Bandiravan passed that, though, that turn. In any case, they were in Bandiravan. and Plumbosaur was killed in Bandiravan. Because he had taken, because the game that they were playing, Plumba, took Balaram past the Bandir tree. Bandir means tree, like banyan tree. So he was supposed to stop there, and his atonement for having lost in the game, it was supposed to end. He was supposed to carry Balaram just to the Bandirava tree. But he took him past that, trying to take him far away from Krishna, and was trying to kill him. So this took place in Bandiravan. So while Krishna and Balaram and their friends were engaged in the pastimes described above, that means the killing of Palambasura, the cows being unobserved because they were playing, they began to wander off on their own, entering further and further into the deepest part of the forest, lured by fresh grasses. The goats, the cows, and buffaloes traveled from one forest to another and entered the forest known as Ichikatavi, which Ichika means reeds. It was a forest full of reeds. Thus, this forest was full of green grass, And therefore they were allured. When they entered, they saw there was a forest fire. And they began to cry. On the other side, Balaram and Krishna, along with their friends, could not find their animals, and they became very aggrieved. They began to chase the cows by following their footprints, as well as the path of eaten grass. And all the boys were fearing that their very means of livelihood, the cows, were now lost. And they were repenting. Oh, we got so absorbed in playing, we forgot our responsibility. Oh, we didn't act properly. They were lamenting and repenting. They were fearing that the cows, which were the whole source of livelihood for the cow community, they were lost. And while searching out the cows in the forest, they themselves were very tired and thirsty. However, they heard the crying of their cows. And as soon as Krishna understood where the cows were, he would call them by their names. He would call out, "Oh, Pingali, oh, Lambavuki, oh, Shambali, oh, Dabali, oh, any more? You forgot? Gangi, oh, Yamuni, oh, Shama? Yeah? Or Shamali? Shamali. Oh, it's so nice to call the names of the cows. You feel so happy." And they would respond by moo. They would call, they would just moo back. When Krishna would call them, they would moo back. They would moo. The cows immediately replied with joy because Krishna was calling their name. By this time, the forest fire had surrounded all of them, and the situation appeared to be very fearful, because they were already tired, they were already thirsty, and the heat, the fire, had surrounded them all. Some say that this forest fire was a friend of Palumba. They were surrounded by the forest fire, and it was very fearful. The flames increased as the wind blew very quickly. And it appeared that everything movable and immovable would be devoured. The movable or what?
Animals,
birds, all the creatures of the forest would be devoured. Everything immovable, the grass, the trees, the creepers. And then what did they do? What did the boys do? What did the cows do? All the cows and boys became very frightened, and they looked towards Krishna and Balaram the way a dying man looks at the picture of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because when a person is dying, all the things in their life that they've taken shelter of, they prove to be not worthy of shelter. What do we take shelter of when there's difficulty? We take shelter of parents. We take shelter of what else?
Friends.
What else? Good. Money. What else? Influence. Physical strength. We eat. Some people take intoxication. Some people, not so many, take poison. But people find something to distract them, or something that isn't really worthy of giving shelter, doesn't have the ability to give shelter, they keep shelter of that. But at the time of death, our friends, our money, our this, our that, Prabhupada told the story about one Marwari man who was dying. And he told the doctor, he was very wealthy, and he was thinking, "I have so many more plans to fulfill." So he said to the doctor, "If you postpone my life, I'll give you this amount of money." Give me another, I need another 3 years to fulfill my plans. I'll pay you this amount if you don't. Like goosh. Is that also Hindi word? Goosh. And of course, that's ridiculous because no one can postpone our life even 1 second. So, when it is time to die, how much we have the ability to take shelter of Krishna is tested. And if we've practiced our whole life taking shelter of false things, then it will be very difficult to take shelter of Krishna. If we've practiced our whole life taking shelter of Krishna in difficulty, then when it's time to leave the body, then by Krishna's grace, hopefully we'll be able to meet Krishna with a full feeling of, oh Krishna, you are my Lord, please take care of me. In the Isopanishad there is that mantra, oh Lord, now that I'm as powerful as fire, now that I'm leaving, please, please remember all, whatever little service I've done for you, please remember and give me shelter. And they said, my dear Krishna, my dear Balaram, my dear Krishna, my dear Krishna, you and Balaram are very powerful. They were remembering what Gaudacharya had said, Anena Sarva Dogani Yamanasya Tishita. Gaudacharya had told Nandamaraj had told all the cowherd village that your boy is so powerful and so wonderful, whenever there is any difficulty, you will all be saved by taking shelter of him. We are now burning from the heat of this blazing fire. Let us take shelter of your Lord's feet. We know you can protect us from this great danger. Our dear friend Krishna, we are your intimate friends. It is not right that we should suffer in this way. We are all completely dependent on you, and you are the knower of all religious life. We do not know anyone except you. Deva vya vyasat nikabhudi. What does that mean? But in your own words, what does it mean?
That,
why are you bringing that up in relationship to what they were? We do not know anyone except you.
That they might be engaged in different activities, but
their shelter was focused on Krishna, on nothing and no one else. And we don't know anyone except you. We don't know anyone except you. That we have no other friends. We don't have our parents. We don't have cows. We don't have anything. When it comes to taking shelter, our mind does not go jump from this place to this place to this place to that place. We only have one shelter, and that shelter is you. No one else. The personality of Godhead heard the appealing voices of his friends, and he cast a pleasing glance over them. What a time to cast a pleasing glance at the forest fire. But by his pleasing glance, by his sweet glance, he was not in anxiety. He cooled them down. He began to answer. By speaking through his eyes, he impressed upon his friends that there was no cause of fear. And he assured them, don't worry. Then Krishna, the supreme mystic, the personality of Godhead, immediately swallowed up all the flames of the fire. So immediately he asked them to close their eyes, and the coward boys were thinking, what is the use of closing our eyes? We're surrounded by a forest fire. How is that going to help us? And then one of the coward boys said, oh, you don't know. That Krishna knows much, he knows tantra. And you cannot perform tantra in public. So if we close our eyes, it will be just like we're alone. He's alone. Therefore, he'll be able to save us. And some Krishna Chakravarti explains that Krishna was also very thirsty because everyone was thirsty and he wanted to drink something. So he called the fire to be drunk by him, and it went into the palm of his hand and became very pleasing and cooling. And then Krishna went, he drank the fire out of his hand. And he couldn't, the fire didn't want to obey Krishna. Because, first of all, he was fire. And second of all, he didn't want to go into his hand and maybe burn Krishna's hand. And also, he was a friend of Columbus or different reasons, maybe. But he had no choice. Because when Krishna orders someone to do something, they have to do it. And Krishna was thinking, my friends are so hungry, tired, and thirsty. Just let them close their eyes and not worry, and I should remove their tiredness and the disturbance caused by heat by placing them under the cooling shade of the Gandhiravat, under that tree. So they all closed their eyes, and then they opened their eyes again. Krishna, the supreme mystic, the powerful personality of Godhead, immediately swallowed up all the flames of the fire. The cows and boys were thus saved from imminent danger. Sometimes it is also said that Krishna asked them to close their eyes because previously, as described in chapter 8. Chapter 8 is what? Yeah, so in the beginning of chapter 8, there's Gargamuni. No? Yeah, Gargamuni. And then Krishna is very, very naughty. He performs naughty activities in that chapter, and then Krishna's playing with his boyfriends. And he's performing so many naughty activities, Mother Yasoda tells Balaram and the other boys, you keep an eye on him, and if he does anything naughty, you immediately let us know. So what did Krishna do? Suddenly, Balaram and some of the other boys came to Mother Yasoda and said, Krishna's eaten dirt. Krishna's eaten dirt. So Krishna got it. He came to his mother, called him, Krishna, have you been eating dirt? Krishna said, no, no, mother, I have not eaten any dirt. And why are your friends, even Balaram, saying that you ate dirt? Silly mother. They were eating dirt. And when I refused to eat it, they said, and I immediately was going to tell you that they were performing this naughty activity of eating dirt. They wanted to ruin my credibility. So they said that I was the one eating dirt. And not only that, they were already angry at me. Even Balaram, your brother, was angry. Yes, why? Because you know I would never steal any sweets. And they stole sweets. And they wanted to make me eat them. And I said, no, I will never eat any stolen sweets. I'm going to tell, and they wanted to get me in trouble again. So, because, of course, Krishna, did Krishna eat the apple or not? What's the conclusion? What do you think? Had he eaten dirt? Because Mother Yashoda looked inside. It's such an amazing story, actually. She looked inside his mouth, and what did she see? The universe in his stomach, actually. And actually, Krishna was afraid of getting punished. And he didn't create the universe, allow Mother Yashoda to see that, but he didn't want to get punished. Why didn't he want to get punished? Because he was a boy. His Mother Yashoda's love was so great, he was thinking of himself just as a little boy. So naturally he didn't want to get punished. And his Aishwarya Shakti, or first his Icha Shakti, his Shakti that fulfills all his desires, was evoked. He desired not to get punished. And that called on his Aishwarya Shakti, who acted independently. And so when Mother Yashoda opened up her, told Krishna to open his mouth, Krishna opened his mouth, and his Aishwarya Shakti, following the instruction of Icha Shakti, the desire Shakti of Krishna, not wishing to get punished, Aishwarya Shakti manifested the universal form within Krishna's mouth. So when Mother Yashoda looked at it, she said, she just got so bewildered by that. And then because she became bewildered, she thought, oh, here I am. I'm completely an illusion. I'm thinking this boy is my son. And I look in his mouth and I see the whole universe. And yet in illusion, I'm thinking of him as my son. And I think Nanda Maharaj in the same illusion as my husband. And that the cowherd men and ladies are my subjects, and I'm the queen of Persia. This boy, he's not my son, look. So when Krishna understood she was thinking like this, he thought, oh no. If she thinks of me in this way, who's going to feed me? So immediately, Yogamaya increased her feeling of vatsalya prema, her feelings of maternal affection for him. And that caused the illusion of the universal form to disappear, even from her eyes, from her consciousness. And then she took Krishna upon her lap. So in any case, all this trouble was caused. Krishna opening his mouth, the Aishwarya Shakti, Krishna's coming out. It was all caused by the boys telling on him. That Krishna was eating dirt, because he had actually, in fact, eaten dirt. So Krishna and Mother Yashoda getting so upset with him because he was eating dirt. So sometimes the acharyas say that Krishna asked the boys to close their mouths, their eyes, because he got into so much trouble for eating dirt. Just imagine how much trouble if they saw that he was eating fire. He would all go tell Mother Yashoda, Krishna is eating fire now. And he'd say, did you eat fire? You eat so much trouble. So therefore he thought, better to have them close their eyes so they don't see what I'm going to do. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said the fire went down into a cooling drop of nectar. Krishna was thirsty. He just drank it up. So they opened their eyes, they were almost unconscious, but when they regained their consciousness and opened their eyes, they saw they were again in the Bandiravan forest with Krishna, Balaram, and the cows. They were astonished to see they were completely free from the attack of the blazing fire and the cows were saved. They secretly thought that Krishna must not be an ordinary boy, but he must be some devata, a demigod. And then they thought, now, when I was before, we were wrestling with Krishna. And We defeated him. I defeated him. Sri Ram defeated him. So Krishna did this. So he must be a demigod. And since we defeated him, sometimes he defeats us, we must also be demigods. Oh. Then they said, how cool is that? No, they didn't say that. That's contemporary people say that. So they thought, we also must be demigods. In the evening, so that is the end of that part of the pastime. In the evening, Krishna and Balaram, along with the boys and the cows, returned to Vrindavan, playing their flutes. And as they approached the village, all the gopis became very joyous, especially, this verse is a very, I can't remember it exactly, Gopi Nam Pramananda Asik Govinda Darshane Chanam Yuga Seva Yasana, I can't remember it all, but it's talking about that the gopis, Gopi Nam Pramananda Asik Govinda Darshane, when they don't have Govindas Darshan, Chanam Yuga, a moment for them seems like a yuga. Thousands and thousands and thousands. Can you just try to conceive of the amount of love we actually had? And this was, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that this is actually describing not the Yasoda, because when Krishna, her, at the end of chapter 14 and also 15, at the end of chapter 14, which is Brahma's prayers, at the end of Brahma's prayers, that chapter, it describes the ecstasy and separation that Mother Yashoda felt. And also end of 15. End of 15. So this supreme joy and experience of separation was especially experienced by Srimati Radharani and the other young gopis who were on that level of love. So as they approached the village, so the cows, so first the gopis would climb to the top of the houses that had a special room on the top that was used for viewing the moon, because it's so hot, and lots of people still do this in Vrindavan in the summer season. They go to sleep on the roof, or because it's so hot downstairs, but because there's breezes on the roof, it's more cooling, and especially when the moonshine is there. Because when the moon is out, it has cooling rays. So they go into these constructs at the top of the houses, and they would just strain their eyes to see when Krishna was coming back from herding the cows, because Chanam Yuga Satam Eva, every moment, like a yuga, or Prabhupada translates it as 12 years or more, but thousands and thousands of years, every moment in his absence, when he was away in the forest, it was intolerable for them. They thought it was a night that would never end. So first, what did they see from on top of the building? The dust, because the cows were coming. So they see a lot of dust being raised, and then they could see the cows, and then when it came closer, they could hear the flute, sound of the flute. And they could hear the boys speaking. all that Krishna had done during the day, they would make rhymes for that. Krishna's killed, swallowed the fire, Balaram killed, Columbus, or they make a sweet sounding rhymes describing all the wonderful things. And every day there were unlimited songs they would sing about Krishna. Because we're hearing only just a little bit of what Krishna did. Krishna did unlimited wonderful things every day. And everything he did was so full of wonderfulness. And he did everything in such a sweet and charming and attractive way. So they could write thousands and thousands and thousands of poems about one day of Krishna's life. Every day they could write so much. They would be singing these poems and Krishna and Balaram. And then finally the gopis would see Krishna. And then at the end of the 15th chapter, what's the title of the 15th chapter? Chaitanya? Yeah. So Janukasura just killed when Krishna and Balaram come home with a cowherd voice. And there's a description, we mentioned this before, an exchange of glances where the gopis are looking straight at Krishna and Krishna is not looking at them. He's there looking at capturing him with their eyes. And then suddenly Krishna turns around and looks at him, and then they begin. He catches them staring at him. And they become very shy. So they cover their heads and their faces with their cloths like that. And they have a shy smile on. And they put their eyes, and then they only can look at Krishna out of the corners of their eyes. Like that. There's two verses that describe this. And the comment of Vishnu Sakavati Thakur is quite wonderful in that way. So all day long, all the residents of Vrindavan, not only the gopis, but all the residents of Vrindavan when Krishna was away with the cows, they were just simply thinking about him continuously. Just, oh, yesterday Krishna did this, and did you see he was wearing this kind of a turban, and when he'd come back, he was wearing, did you see the garland, the forest flowers that he was wearing? And sometimes, and the cowherd boys would always be giving Krishna new garlands. Where did you go get those fine earrings made out of black sapphires?
Jagannath is here.
Yes, not only Jagannath, but Gopal also.
Look at that.
Look at them.
Look at them.
Look how much they like Krishna could talk to. Their eyes are so wide.
Yeah.
Eyebrows was standing.
Huh?
Eyebrows are standing on.
Yeah, yes. They're always in such ecstasy. Especially Lord Jagannath. His pupils are contracted.
Another powerful element in your house.
So, no, I'm just looking for something. I wanted to see the Sanskrit of that verse. It starts Gopinam Paramananda Asi Govinda Darshane Chanam Yuga Sataniva Yasham. It's the final verse in chapter 18:19. Such a nice verse. Is that there?
No, I was just looking at that. I'm not able to say the meaning properly, like Vyavyasa Bhuti.
Oh, yeah. Vyavyasa Bhuti. That means Ikhyakarananda. Those who are resolute, their mind is focused on Krishna only.
Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one.
Yeah, focused, in other words, like a laser. So that's the end of it. Gopinam, repeat after me. Gopinam Paramananda.
Gopinam Paramananda.
What does that mean? The gopis, the young gopis especially. Paramananda. They're experiencing the Parama Ananda, the greatest happiness. Asi Govinda Darshane.
Asi Govinda Darshane.
That means from Govinda Darshana, the greatest happiness arose in their hearts from Govinda Darshan, from seeing Govinda. Sanam Yuga Sutam Iva.
Sanam Yuga Sutam Iva.
Sutam, Yuga Sutam. Means 100 yugas. 100 millenniums. Iva, just as a moment. Sanam, a moment. Sanam Yuga Sutam Iva. A moment appeared like Sutam Yuga. 100 yugas, a moment. Yasam yena vina bhavat.
Yasam yena vina
bhavat. Vina bhavat. Without Krishna, yasam yena vina, without Krishna, became abhavat. Became like 100 yugas. So who can imagine the intensity of their devotion for Krishna? That's love. So it is unparalleled. Throughout the day, the gopis used to think of Krishna while he was in the forest, and in his absence, they were considering one moment to be like 12 years. So Prabhupada translated Yuga Satam. How could the people, if he would have wrote thousands of millenniums, people wouldn't have any way to conceive of what it is. So one moment, 12 years, long enough to understand. Now the description of autumn. This chapter is actually description of autumn, and the other half of it is the rainy season. This is a description of autumn and description of the rainy season as well. And this chapter is also interesting. Why is it interesting? In relationship to Prabhupada. Yes. First it wasn't a book, but he wanted to get out of India, to escape from India. It was so difficult in those days to get a passport. So he wanted to attend this conference in Japan. He knew that the Japanese people are very fond of nature, natural beauty, and Japanese painting, very natural, very much like Chinese painting also. So he conceived of going to this exhibition, and he was invited to go to this exhibition where they would paint the paintings of the wonders of the autumn season in Vrindavan, and Prabhupada would give a philosophical purport to it, as is described here. But that Prabhupada never went, but the book actually was published with Chinese style paintings. Do we have that book? Yeah. The killing of Pralambasura and the devouring of the devastating forest fire by Krishna and Balaram became household topics in Vrindavan. So there was the hot season, and after the hot season comes what season? What's after that? The rainy season comes. So then there'll be a description of the rainy season, and then after the rainy season comes spring comes after winter. No, there's a middle season called Indian summer. That's what we used to call it. It's even more hot and humid. When the rains stop, it's hot again, but no rain, and it's hot and humid. Oh, from Vrindavan. Very hot and humid. That's up to the end of September even. And then after that comes Kartik. Which is the autumn. This is nice weather. The killing of Pralambasura and the devouring of the devastating forest fire by Krishna and Balaram became household topics in Vrindavan. That means that everyone simply was talking about Krishna. They had no time to
gossip.
Huh. Yes. Or talk about, actually, I was listening to Prabhupada speak about that in a lecture that I heard this morning. He said, he was talking about the tongue, the diwa. It has two functions, eating prasadam, eating and speaking. So he said that people, even they eat a full meal and they go outside, and then they go, even though they have their stomach is full, they will go to the tea shop and eat tea and biscuit. So the jiva, the tongue, is making such a demand all the time. So instead of serving the tongue and its demands, he said we should serve Krishna. And then he said we should take the vow to only eat prasadam, and then if there is, and then he said, even if there is chocolate, you will not eat if you have taken the vow to eat. I'm not sure, there must have been something going on. Chocolate. Not sure what chopped cutlet is, but I can imagine it is not veg. Yes? But he mentioned it, he said, is it Mayapur? Maybe, I think it's Mayapur, yeah. And then we take that vow, and then vow to only speak about Krishna. So they were only, the residents of Vrindavan were only speaking about Krishna. Sevan Mukhi Jivado Spayam Sparatyado. So they concluded, and all they described these wonderful activities to their wives. The cowherd men described these wonderful activities to their wives and to everyone else, and all were struck with wonder. That means the activities of the killing of Pralambasura and the devouring of the devastating forest fire by Krishna and Balaram. One each. They concluded that Krishna and Balaram were demigods who had kindly come to Vrindavan to become their children. In this way, the rainy season ensued. It began. In India, after the scorching heat of the summer, the rainy season is
welcome.
Very welcome. The clouds accumulating in the sky, covering the sun and the moon, became very pleasing to the people, and they expect rainfall at every moment. And it's such a relief when the rain comes. I remember in Vrindavan, the one time I was there throughout the summer, when the rain comes, you go outside and it's falling on you. Because your skin is all so hot and you're deeply heating it. And it's just so nice. And it used to come exactly on schedule, even in Vrindavan. It used to come in the third week of June. Everything, even when I was there, it was on schedule, everything. And then the winter was best in January. It would go, you couldn't see the sun for, the winter would last 6 weeks exactly, and for two of those weeks, the sun wouldn't come out, and it was foggy, and then it was really cold, but it was only 2 weeks. Now, schedule is not being followed. The rainy season is very welcome. The clouds accumulating in the sky, covering the sun and the moon, become very pleasing to the people, and they expect rainfall at every moment. After summer, the advent of the rainy season is considered to be a life-giving source for everyone. The thunder and occasional lightning are also pleasurable to the people. The symptoms of the rainy season may be compared to the symptoms of the living entity who are covered by the three modes of material nature. The unlimited sky is like the supreme Brahman, and the tiny living entities are like the covered sky, or Brahman covered by the three modes of material nature. Originally, everyone is part and parcel of Brahman. The supreme Brahman, or the unlimited sky, can never be covered by a cloud, but a portion of it can be covered. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, the living entities are part and parcel of the supreme personality of Godhead, but they are only an insignificant portion of the supreme Lord. This portion is covered by the modes of material nature, and therefore the living entities are residing within this material world. Okay, what did Prabhupada say? Yeah, and before they can get covered, well, the supreme, like the clouds cover the sky, but cannot cover the sun, the sky above us. The Brahma Jyoti, spiritual effulgence, is just like the sunshine. As the sunshine is full of molecular shining particles, so the Brahma Jyoti is full of minute portions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Out of that unlimited expansion of minute portion of the Supreme Lord, some are covered by the influence of material nature, while others are free. All those who are covered by the three modes of material nature, raise your hand. All those who are free, raise... No, I can't give you a free. I can't even tell you to raise your hand. Because you're free to raise your hand if you want to, because you're free. Now, more metaphors. Clouds are accumulated water drawn from the land by the sunshine. Continually for 8 months, the sun evaporates all kinds of water from the surface of the globe, and this water is accumulated in the shape of clouds, which are distributed as water when there is need. Similarly, a government exacts various taxes from the citizens, which the citizens are able to pay by their different material activities, agriculture, trade, and industry. This government could also exact taxes in the form of income tax and sales tax. And the Prophet doesn't mention, what is it called again?
GST.
GST, or in England they call it VAT. In India they also have VAT. Yes, but. What they are doing. In India, they're also having two sets of books for everything, the one you show the tax people and the one that you keep of what's really going on. But the king government can use these taxes. This is compared to the sun's drawing water from the earth. And there's again need of when there's again need of water on the surface of the globe, the sunshine converts the water into clouds and distributes it all over the globe. Similarly, the taxes collected by the government must be distributed to the people again as educational work, public work, sanitary work, etc. This is very essential for good government. The government should not simply exact taxes for useless squandering. and raising the salaries. And who is the one who, in the government, who is it that votes that the salaries should be increased?
The government.
Yeah. Isn't that ridiculous? That's ridiculous, right? Okay, so go about what you do. It's like putting the all the security officers in the airports, they are the ones who control how much money they get. And they vote on it. Good landings. But they never, why won't they allow that to happen? Because they know they'll just increase a ridiculous amount. It's like putting kangaroos in charge of the protection of the garden. From animals coming. Just like. During the rainy season, there are strong winds blusting all over the country and carrying clouds from one place to another to distribute life-giving water to the needy living entities. When water is urgently needed after the summer season, the clouds are just like a rich man who, in times of need, distributes his money even by exhausting his own treasury, his whole treasury. So the clouds exhaust themselves by distributing water all over the surface of the globe. So what are the clouds compared to in this case?
Rich man.
In what sense?
He predominantly distributes his wealth.
And then, so what's the relationship to the clouds? And after the rich man, he's so generous, he distributes his wealth to such a degree that he has no more wealth left. So the clouds, they distribute all the water until there is no more water left, and basically there's no more clouds left because of that. And what about the law of gravity? The law of gravity states that it's that things, that an object must go towards the earth or something like that. But the clouds, well, the water is heavier than the air, but it just up in space, just floating until Indra or something, someone. Until time, so practically speaking, defies the law of gravity. Yes, that's a wonderful system. Mark Dasarath, the father of Lord Ramachandra, used to fight with his enemies. It was said that he approached them just like a farmer uprooting unnecessary plants and trees. And when there was a need of giving charity, he used to distribute money exactly as the cloud distributes rain. The distribution of rain by clouds is so sumptuous that it is compared to the distribution of wealth by a great, munificent person. The clouds' downpour is so sufficient that the rain even falls on rocks and hills and on the oceans and seas where there's no need for water. The clouds resemble a charitable person who opens his treasury for distribution and who does not discriminate whether the charity is needed or not. He gives charity open-handedly. Before the rainfall, the whole surface of the globe becomes almost depleted of all kinds of energies and appears very lean. And after the rainfall, the whole surface of the earth becomes green with vegetation and appears to be very healthy and strong. Here a comparison is made to the person undergoing austerities for fulfillment of a material desire. The flourishing condition of the earth after a rainy season is compared to the fulfillment of material desires. Sometimes when a country is subjugated by an undesirable government, persons and parties undergo severe austerities and penances to be in control of the government. And when they gain control, they flourish by giving themselves generous salaries. Ah. This temporary profit is like the flourishing of the earth in the rainy season. Actually, one should undergo severe austerities and penances only to achieve spiritual happiness. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is recommended that tapasya or austerity should be accepted for realizing the Supreme Lord. By accepting austerity and devotional service, one regains his spiritual life. And as soon as one regains his spiritual life, he enjoys unlimited spiritual bliss. If someone undertakes austerities and penances for some material gain, it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that the results are temporary and that they are desired by persons of less intelligence. During the rainy season. Oh! Okay, the last one. During the rainy season, in the evening, there are many glowworms visible on the tops of the trees, hither and thither, and they glitter just like lights. But the luminaries of the sky, the stars and the moon, are not visible, because they are covered by the clouds, because it's the rainy season. Similarly, in the age of Kali, persons who are atheists or miscreants become very prominently visible, whereas persons who are actually following the Vedic principles of spiritual emancipation are practically obscured. This age of Kali Yuga is compared to the cloudy season of the living entities. In this age, real knowledge is covered by the influence of the material advancement of civilization. The chief mental speculators, atheists, and manufacturers of so-called religious principles become prominent like the glowworms. As people strictly following the Vedic principles or scripture injunctions become covered by the clouds of this age. People should learn to take advantage of the actual luminaries in the sky, the sun, the moon, and stars, instead of the glowworms' light. Actually, the glowworms cannot give any light in the darkness of night. As clouds sometimes clear, even in the rainy season, and sometimes the moon, stars, and sun become visible. So even in this Kali Yuga, there are sometimes advantages. Even when the clouds are covering the sky, there are some advantages. And in Kali Yuga, there are some advantages. For example, sometimes Lord Chaitanya's Vedic movement of distributing the teachings of the Hare Krishna mantra is heard. People seriously eager to find real light to take advantage of this movement, instead of looking towards the light of mental speculators and atheists, were compared to glowworms. When you were young, did you used to catch glowworms? No. Did you? You too? Malaysia, they have glowworms? They have glowworms? What would you do with them when you catch them?
In the bottle.
So you don't have to go.
We don't have lights on the night. So all of us, we can like we look for glowworms, put in the bottle, then we have lights.
What?
Yeah, because we don't have electricity.
How long before you have to look them over? Can they last till the morning?
But in the morning, the sun rays from the sun. Everything just seems like glowworms every night.
No, in the morning, I'm asking about the glowworms.
They don't have any more light.
For their life stuff?
Yeah.
And what did you do?
They recharge.
They charge the glowworms and stuff. Rechargeable glowworms. I could see. He's running a special.
How long do they live?
And how will you feed them?
Well, you can make like sub-G of the...
Oh! That is terrible, John.
Remember, he wasn't a devotee when he was.
They're doing that, isn't it? Before, you know, bugs will become like small.
Okay.
So they were saved.
Yeah.
Really?
Great mercy, bro.
Yeah, just imagine. I mean, don't just imagine. Okay. But so tomorrow we shall hear 2:03 about the first after the first rainfall. So this is the rainy season, the thunder and sound and the clouds. What happens after the first rainfall and the thundering sound of the clouds comes? Yeah. You're talking about not peacocks but frogs. Peacocks will come later, maybe. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Is that a friend question?
Yeah.
Is that Krishna? Do you kill someone every day?
Minimum. One a day. So many demons.
So every time he goes out, he kills and does something?
Even though we don't know very many of them. Mm-hmm. But it was so exciting.
It's like part of the death.
Sometimes said that one would come just for lunch.
Because
the boys
would
so funny.
It said that Agassura, that the boys were having so much fun. That Krishna and the Yogamaya, and there would be no way that they would stop playing because that's the nature of boys. They'll just keep playing and they'll never eat. So Yogamaya inspired Agassura to come. That's before lunch. But it's said that this is just some. And the Vrindavan forest was always making itself into new, showing, exhibiting new features for the pleasure of Krishna. And the different seasons. And therefore, when the boys saw Agasura, they just thought, this is just another wonderful arrangement. Some of them thought, this is just another wonderful arrangement of the Vrindavan forest for the pleasure of Krishna. But other boys thought, no, this is a snake. And the other boys thought, oh, this is just a wonderful cave made by the Vrindavan forest. And other boys said, no, look, can't you see? Those sharp jagged rocks, there's teeth. And in the cloud, that thing extending to the top of the sky, that's his upper lip. And that road going right into the cave, that's his tongue. And the other boys thought, yeah, you're right. It is a snake. It's going to be so wonderful. Because then Krishna will come and save us. So they marched into the mouth of the snake, thinking that how nice it's going to be to have the intimacy of Krishna saving us. And Krishna saw them walking into the mouth of the snake, and of course, how could he want them to walk in the mouth of the snake, because he loves them so much. So he didn't want them to walk in, and the boys wanted to. And Yogamaya, who makes all these arrangements, took the side of the boys and defeated Krishna's desire. Because what rules in Vrindavan? The prem rules, not Yogamaya, not Krishna, but prem rules in Vrindavan. It causes everything to happen. The Prince of Vrindavan. in younger form. Thank you.